My Radio 1.
From its launch in 1967 right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years as they each tell the story of their Radio 1.
My Radio 1. Sean Dilly. With Sean Dilly.
That's it for this special edition of the Top 40 live from the radio show at Earl's Court in London. It was computer compiled by Gallup and the show is produced by Chris Lysis.
In that case, I am chuffed to welcome a celebrated executive producer and eventual Radio 1 music chief. It's the incomparable Chris Lysis.
Hi, Sean. Really nice to be here. I hope I don't take up too much of your time,
Chris,
and I can say something useful.
Oh, you'll say plenty, I know. And how could we ever do a series on Radio 1 without speaking to you? Because it was a very, very long career with the network. Of course, we'll cover some of that during this programme. But it was in 1966 when you joined the BBC. And what a marvellous time, not knowing, of course, then what was about to unfold about 18 months later.
No, I couldn't have timed it better. You know, I lived in the Isle of Man at the time. I'd come to be aware of the Beatles. You know, that was pretty hip. And, you know, and that explosion. And I joined the BBC as a technical operator, which meant I was working in control room, working with circuits, transmitters and all the rest of it, making sure everything got to air. They'd employed far too many people with degrees in studio managers. And they had moved on to, because they were going to be directors, film directors, creatives, because they had those kinds of qualifications. So all of a sudden I found myself from being a TO just amalgamated with this, the heady heights of program operations, as a studio manager. So within about 18 months I was there doing a job that I'd been turned down for because I didn't have a degree.
It's beautiful.
It's wonderful irony.
Yes.
Yeah, the BBC has asked me to come along this evening and introduce to you five lovable young men whose music is currently taking the country by storm.
Now, it was a legendary programme that you became involved with, which was a mainstay of the Radio 1 schedule across three decades, hosted by the likes of John Peel, Alan Black, Bob Harris and Pete Drummond, which I guess first got you noticed.
In a sense, my first big break was I was tape hopping on In Concert with Jeff Griffin as the producer and Tony Wilson, who again I'm sure you're going to talk to, who went on to be the rock guru. And I remember Jeff saying to me one day, "Oh, Chris," and I'd been doing this, I guess we must be now, I'm guessing a bit, 68 69, "have you heard Tony is going up to be a producer? He's being promoted to being a producer, and I want you to take over doing the sound mix on In Concert," which was mixed as live, quarter inch tape, no remixing, no nothing. And I said to Jeff, but I've only recorded a few, you know, I wasn't into full on electric bands. He said, no, I've heard what you've done, and do you know what the first gig I had?
No.
As a sound mixer?
Go on.
Pink Floyd.
Wow.
And I was bricking it. I was bricking it, Sean, because the routine would be, you'd get there about 11 o'clock in the morning, start setting up the studio space, and the band would appear in bits and pieces, or the roadies would, and they'd bring the kit in and set it all up, you see. The way the process used to work, band would be spending months of angst in the studio getting it right for the album. They would then go on tour to promote the album, and in the interim, in the bit between, they'd come into In Concert to get the national promotion through Radio 1, which was huge at the time, you know, to promote both the album sales and the tour. And I remember them coming in, and they were quite generous at the end. They came in to listen to a bit of the playback, and I was sort of thinking, well, how's this going to go? And, you know, they said, oh, yeah, it's great for a live reference. And that was the name of the game, you know. We were recording it as it was at the time. It didn't have all of the finesse And that's so. And Jeff got me into that.
And we have once again some more historic sessions to play for you in the course of the next hour and 45 minutes or so. We'll have music for you from Tyrannosaurus Rex, I do mean Tyrannosaurus, Joe Cocker, Jethro Tull, the Wailers, Sutherland Brothers and Led Zeppelin. Also, we'll play you the first record ever featured on Top Gear back in 1967, which may surprise you slightly when you hear it. And also our Sig tune played by the Nice, Keith Emerson, Lee Jackson and Blinky Davidson.
Yeah, the big figure in my life later on was John Walters. But back in the day, I used to be recording engineer for John Peel's sessions. And that was again done in an outside studio, the Playhouse Theatre. And the way it was configured was that the theatre was the theatre, that's where the stage was, that's where they did the recording. And it wouldn't necessarily be an audience, it was a space to play loud pop music. And so it was Top Gear, and I was the engineer, and I was in what I imagine had been the prompt box on one side of the entrance to the theatre proper, and you know they were creating the sounds in the other one. So you were there when they waved their finger at you through the double glazing between the two rooms. You'd press the start button and you would do it. And of course, in those days there wasn't multi-track. It was overdubbing, and you could only go to three generations before the quality deteriorated. And, you know, so I was there and pressing at the appointed time, and then Walters came over the little tannoy between the two of us. And he said, "Oh, Chris, can we go back to, let's say, take three on the third track that the guys did?" And I couldn't find it. I said, "Well, you didn't tell me to keep it." He said, "I didn't tell you to wipe it." I said, "Well, I haven't got it." And from that point on, he called me, until we'd grown old and a bit more gentle with each other, he called me Chris Wiper, and that name stuck, and my God, it hurt, Walters, wherever you are. Anyway, I went on then as a studio manager.
It also set you on your way, of course, because by the early 70s, you were producing programmes like Sounds on Sunday, wasn't it?
Yes.
It's 7 o'clock on 247. Welcome to Sounds on Sunday. And now, if you're sleeping comfortably, I got some friends want to bang on your door.
Lovely to hear the unmistakable voice of our much-missed mutual friend Stuart Henry there, one of the many presenters that you used on a programme which, being honest, you don't have that many recollections of.
Sounds on Sunday was almost pulling together what I'd been doing as a studio manager with the bands I knew and and clearly they'd got a hole in the schedules for a Sunday evening after the Top 40, and I did it, but to my shame, I don't remember much more than that.
Tonight we are featuring in Sounds on Sunday the music of, believe it or not, Slade. We have in the studio with me Noddy Holder and Jim Lee.
Hello.
Right. Listen, where are the other two indolent gentlemen, Dave and Don?
They are sunning themselves in Tenerife, idling their lives away.
And why did you two not go and accompany them?
Well, we've got to write the songs, haven't we? You know, we're the workers.
Listen, you've just been writing a whole lot of songs for this film, haven't you?
Yeah.
How did that go?
It went really well. It was hard work, getting up at 6 o'clock every morning on the set at 8 o'clock. But we enjoyed it.
By this stage of your BBC career, even though you'd been around for a few years proving your worth, you were very much regarded by the network as one to watch. So how did you move from some of the more specialist programming to getting involved in those of the mainstream?
I then actually got into a situation where I was in with the production department with people like Jeff and Bernie Andrews, and then I moved over on attachment. So as I remember it, early 70s, I was actually going off to Egton House, to the home of Radio 1, to actually dep for daytime radio producers. And I kept getting hoiked back to studio managers to actually to do my day job kind of thing. That's not quite the case. And then suddenly there'd be a holiday relief to do, and I'd go over off and do Paul Burnett at lunchtime or Tony Blackburn or whatever.
Well, let's talk about Tony Blackburn, because that was officially the first daytime programme that you were producing, wasn't
right,
it?
Right, yes, yeah.
It was a slightly difficult time for Tony, of course, because only a couple of years before that he'd been doing The Breakfast Show. He's been very honest in saying that he didn't want to give The Breakfast Show up, but obviously Noel was a huge rising star. But Tony eventually became very well ensconced in that slot. What are your memories of it?
I remember him being a huge enthusiast for pop music. He was very keen on being on the money, whether or not he ever went. But you see, in a sense, that was contradictory to my background, live bands, live music. He was more interested in the current chart and all the rest of
it. Remember, the address to write to for the Workers' Call, Tony Blackburn Show, Workers' Call, BBC London, W1A4WW. And all we need from you is your name, address and telephone number. And, of course, it is preferable that you're in at sometime between 11 and 12, about sort of 11:30 to 12-ish time. Otherwise, we could well ring you up and you won't be there, and we'll think you're very silly and we'll throw your card away. Right. Don't forget, of course, at 12 o'clock, it'll be... Oh, we're so lazy nowadays, all these jingles and everything. I mean, we don't even have to say the day of the week anymore. I mean, if I wanted to say... I don't even have to say the day... Monday! And the next record coming up is going to be from the year... 1959! Very shortly, we'll just have to sit here and press buttons, say good morning, and then the rest of it, eventually, will be so automated, we won't even have to turn up.
But no, I worked well with him, and we had a good time together, and, you know, I don't think we innovated a lot. But, you know, for him, it was something that actually gave him a foothold with somebody who sort of still, you know, was in tune with what was going on and actually throwing in the odd. And then again, that happened with Paul Burnett, you know, and I can't remember, we used to have a feature where we'd play one record, which I always picked, which was One to Watch or whatever it was called.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was never, from my perspective, it was never premeditated. I just did what I did.
45s are my record of the week next week, although I won't be physically spinning it. I'll be listening, though, to 275-285. And, of course, there'll be Peter Powell actually sat here in the studio playing those records for him. That's going to be the record of the week next week. I hope he likes it. No worse than playing somebody else's record of the week that you don't like. The 45s, and Couldn't Believe a Word. It's out on the Chopper record label. Roxy Music now, number four in the chart with Angel Eyes.
It's interesting as well, because we've talked about you bringing some of the music that that you were enthusiastic about coming into to daytime Radio 1. By this stage, of course, you had quite a big say on the playlist.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Didn't you?
Yeah, well, I was there. I mean, in the playlist, despite everything the record industry thought about, it was a very democratic institution. You know, there were basically the six producers, six arbitrarily, but about six producers who were into doing mainstream radio programs. It was chaired by Doreen Davis, who was the Obersturmführer of the playlist, and you know, and it was done on a vote, and everybody used to bring their selection of records. And then when it moved on, when I became in charge of the playlist, moving on a bit, but I did get the dynamic between mainstream and the rest of the schedule.
It must have helped somebody like Mike Reed, who you'd produced in the evening, when Mike moved on to The Breakfast Show.
Yeah.
That must have helped with regard to what you've just been talking
about. Yes, absolutely. And Mike's that's a very good example, because he and I got on very well, and we almost created another bubble in that early evening show. He'd got the profile. Da-da-da-da-da. He went off, and actually the aforementioned Doreen Davis wanted me to go and produce The Breakfast Show with him.
Ah.
And I refused.
Oh, baby, I'm dreaming of Monday. Surprise, 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 and here we are. The Jam from Sound Effects and that track called Monday. 24 minutes to 8 on Radio 1. Happy birthday to Caroline Boston in St. Peter's Square, who's got a birthday today. And also a few hellos coming up in about 10 minutes' time on school desks. If you've written in, yours could be coming up. And if you haven't, do so, and we'll try and sort you out.
So, and I thought, no, I'm not going to get caught up in the glamour with a small g of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go and produce Mike. Nothing against Mike, and I think Mike Read got it because he'd had that and he'd loved the evenings because it gave him freedom. As soon as you got to within that format of the playlist and, you know, whatever the playlist was, you played five playlist records in an hour and you were allowed two oldies, you know, it was right because it honed it to what the audience wanted to hear, but it wasn't being experimental.
Well, Claire and the guys must have been chewing their nails for the last 3 weeks. The third week it's been at number two. It's like an Ultravox and Vienna situation, which was there for about 4 or 5 weeks. Never mind. Maybe they can hang on for one more week and push themselves up one notch. 6 weeks in, Altered Images, Happy Birthday, and that takes us to this. At 27 minutes past 8, they're on top again. From last week's 3 to this week's 1, the Police and Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic.
Who could ever forget, Chris, that wonderful relationship that Radio 1 had in the late 70s, early 80s with, I think it was Nationwide on the TV, wasn't it? And the British Rock and Pop Awards.
Oh, right.
And you were responsible on the Radio 1 side for that, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but the Rock and Pop Awards.
It was a big deal in those days, wasn't it?
Yes. But, I mean, it was yes, it was huge. But I mean, it was a telly event. Don't let's delude ourselves. It really was.
What's the difficulty then, Chris, in covering that on the radio side when television basically is calling all the shots?
Well, because what you have to do is sort of close your eyes and how is this sounding for the listeners?
Viewers, the listeners, and the readers whose votes have chosen these winners for the British Rock and Pop Awards for 1978.
That's right. And our thanks also to all the people in the pop music and recording industries for all the entertainment and pleasure they've given us over the past few months. So it's good night to Radio 1 listeners.
And good night to BBC 1 viewers.
Good night.
Good night.
Do you remember, by any chance, whizzing around the country in 1980? Because I have talked to another very, very well-known Radio 1 disc jockey about his thoughts on you, and he has got... No, Chris, don't be like that. He thinks very warmly of you because you were in Stoke-on-Trent trying to find the next big thing musically, but what you in actual fact stumbled upon was a great big Radio 1 star of the future. Do you remember who that was? Well, I shall tell you. Bruno Brooks.
Bruno Brooks.
Lodgeness abounds, and 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps ends tonight's show. Many thanks to my producer, Chris Lysett. Thanks to you also for listening. I'll catch you tomorrow night at 8.
And the lovely thing is, you and Bruno would go full circle because you produced him a few years later when the Sunday Evening Top 40 was enjoying a huge audience. But after coming across him in Stoke, you took Radio 1 all around the country. This was something that you felt very strongly about.
I did have this vision or feeling that, you know, Radio 1, by nature of its location and all that, it was very London-centric. And I like doing outside broadcasts. I like getting out, getting down with the kids in wherever. You know, if you could go up and you could do... And I did a whole series around the country from through local radio. Mm. So it's very grateful to the local radio guys for promoting it, because we got a focus of... We were in Newcastle, and I can't remember what we called it now, but, you know, and we went round the country, and to me, it was a no-brainer.
Threesome, Lamal, Stevie Wonder, and Tears for Fears. Alison Moyer is next, plus your horoscope for you if you're a Piscean today.
Through the rest of the 80s, you produced Simon Bates. Radio
1. Pisces, you don't have to suffer in silence, and if you're a typical Piscean, you won't suffer much longer. Ultimately, though, you're going to have to admire your current dilemma, because it's the direct result of having gone against your principles and your instincts recently.
Then it was Adrian John.
Valentine's Day, good morning. Thursday, lots and lots of messages from loved ones to you coming up in a moment. Here's Shaking Stevens for West.
You did eventually produce The Breakfast Show with this man.
It's the Mike Smith Breakfast Show on Radio 1. On line one, we got Adrian. Hello, Adrian.
Hello there.
Where are you calling from?
Grimsby.
And what are you doing in Grimsby today? Not having a holiday?
No, I would have been.
What are you doing then?
Filleting place.
Filleting fish?
Yeah.
You're a man with soul.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, all right, well, have a good day. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Line two is David, I think. Hi, David.
Good morning, Mike. Good
morning. What are you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm a news agent. I'm in Hampstead, West London.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Right. And you got the radio on there blaring out nice and loud?
Yes.
Don't upset
Don't
upset the neighbours, will you?
No, I won't. I'll try not to.
You don't talk like someone from Hampstead.
I'm a northerner. I'm from Yorkshire.
Ah, well, welcome to London.
Thank you very much.
And let's go to line three. And I think it's someone called Gaskin from Rill. Who's that?
Hello, it's Rosie Gaskin.
Rosie Gaskin.
Hello.
Rosie, what are you up to today?
Well, I'd like to say hello to Mum and Dad, who's slave driving me today and making me work in the carpet shop.
So the carpet shop is open in Rill, is it?
Yes, anybody that wants to come and have a look.
You're having a real good time.
Yes.
Yeah. You've heard all those jokes before. Let's go to line five. Who's on line five? Hello? We got a dog on line five. Linda? Hello? Oh, that's line six. Linda.
Line six, hi.
Is that Joe?
Yeah.
I'm confused now. What's the dog doing?
I know, it's me getting really worried about the whole situation.
Well, what were you doing to the dog?
And then there was Peter Powell.
Many Radio 1 producers, many people who've been involved in Radio 1 for a long time, and certainly helped me out with my career so far. Starting with the person who actually signed me, I'd like to say thank you to Doreen Davis, who brought me to Radio 1 in the first place. To Johnny Beeling, who's allowed me to stay here. Thank you, Johnny. To my first producer 15 years ago, when I did 11 shows on Radio 1 when I was 18, 19, or I can't remember. Tony Wilson, Dave Tate, who has last left Radio 1, is now with World Service. Dave Atkey, Chris Lycett, Mick Vilkoich, and Roger Pusey.
During all of these years, you'd risen to the rank of executive producer. How did that promotion happen?
Well, I ended up as executive producer, and I was a guy called Teddy Warwick, who I'm sure has come up, and he retired, and I became executive producer of the not the daytime shows, let's put it like that. And so that included In Concert and da 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 da. And that was the point at which I really felt I had, and it wasn't premeditated, I just felt comfortable, and I thought, right, I've got the experience, I know how I want to take it, I know the sort of things. So then, and it was at that time that you know, I'd known Walters, and I'd always been slightly frightened of Walters.
What's on? Walters Weekly, Radio 1, 4 o'clock, Saturday. Well, there's a man who's written a book about skinheads. Oh. Then there's a man who paints portraits of cats. Oh. Yeah, hold on a minute. And there's also a man playing some hot jazz. on the Alpenhorn. Okay, I said okay. Why shouldn't he play jazz on the Alpenhorn? We should have more cultural crossovers, alternatives. That's what Walters Weekly's about. In Switzerland, a Walters Weekly trial would probably end, sort of...
And just prior to us starting this programme, you told me a brilliant John Walters story, which I'd love for you to relay right now. And this involved another legendary Radio 1 producer.
Dave Price became... chief assistant to the controller, Johnny Beerling, and so Dave Price was, as Walters described him, measuring man, okay? Because he would say, oh, yeah, anyway. So I remember being in Walters' office. I must have been there for some reason, apart from the company, and there was Walters, Peel, and me. And we were all talking about things, about programmes, what was coming up, but it wasn't a programme meeting, it was just a gossip, a coffee to help you wake up in the morning, about 10 o'clock in the morning. Suddenly there's a knock, knock, knock on the door. Go in, says Walters from, he held court from behind his desk. I mean, they were really pokey, and I was sitting on an upturned rubbish bin, and it's Dave Price. And he talked directly to Walters, he ignored everybody else who was there. And he just said, well, you've got to do something about the John Peel archive. And you saw Walters absolutely bristle because he was a great combatant. And so he said, the John Peel archive. He said, yes, all the sessions that you're keeping. And they were stored in nothing much bigger than a cupboard just by the lifts on the third floor. He said, what do you mean, the stuff that's all in that little room? Da, 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 da. Yes, they're taking up too much room. saw Walters think a bit, and then he said, "How much too much room?" And by this time, Dave Price is getting a bit edgy, and he's sort of saying, well, you know, and it was Dave Price's job to make sure facilities were even-handed across the... And they were all session tapes from all the bands over many years by this time.
Incredible.
You know, all up there. And he said, "How much room do you need, Dave?" And Dave made the classic sin of saying, "Well, I think about 6 feet." So Walters immediately grabbed onto that and said, "So which 6 feet do you want? Do you want the 6 feet from A to C that include Bowie, blah, 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 or X, Y, Z?" And all Dave could do, and I felt for him, actually, because we were sort of suppressing giggles and titters, and he just turned round on his heel and stomped off saying, "Well, something's got to be done," and off he went. But no, I mean, because he was all right, Dave. He was only doing... But Walters and I were talking, and he was... He was a fine arts student from Newcastle, I think, Newcastle University. And we came up with this idea, probably over a couple of beers, about an arts programme for Radio 1, contemporary arts programme. And much to our surprise, when we put together a proposal and pushed it into Beerling, it got accepted.
Hello, highbrows! This is John Walters with Radio 1's highbrow programme, Walters Weekly. Highbrow was the word people used to give to anything rather intellectual. You don't hear it much today. A.P. Herbert once said that a highbrow was a man who looked at a sausage and thought about Picasso. Thanks Paul Gambaccini, incidentally, who looks at a sausage and thinks of a sausage. Of course, Paul looks at Picasso and thinks of a sausage. And since last week, I look at a sausage and think of the ravishing beauties. And here's one of them now.
And it was a very eclectic mix of...
It was, yeah.
Very off-the-wall stuff. And we got the same listening figures as Gambo got with arguably a much more popular show.
And his trailers.
And I loved it. And I went... And I, to be honest with you, Sean, I was Robin to his Batman. I really was. He had about as much technical now. So when we were going off to doing all of these things, I took the Ewer or the record Naga or whatever it was, and we'd record interviews and stuff, and I'd do the editing and then la 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 la. And it just the chemistry just worked between the two of us. But I mean, and I do, and it ran for, I don't know, and much to both our surprises, for at least three series.
Chris, such a fantastic BBC career that you went on to have, and such an integral part of the Radio 1 success story in the 1970s and 1980s as well. Thank you so much for sharing your Radio 1 with me.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I hope I haven't banged on too much.
Oh, Eddie, talking about being a pleasure. It's been a pleasure for us to listen to your story.